Hello everyone, I'm Alastair Willis, Music Director of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Welcome to Aha with Alastair, our podcast for this weekend's Jack M. Champagne Masterworks Concert. On the program is Schumann's uplifting Second Symphony, Samuel Barber's beloved violin concerto, and a piece called Jabberwocky by the American composer Anthony DiLorenzo, which describes Alice's journey through the looking glass back to Wonderland. You may be familiar with Jabberwocky. It's a nonsense poem, one that confuses Alice, and I guess still confuses us today. It begins, "'Twas brillig, and the slithy toads did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe." It's a poem all English school children learn. Who doesn't like talking in nonsense? Anthony DiLorenzo's piece turned out to be one of the best premieres I've ever conducted, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be introducing it to our audiences in South Bend this weekend. The music immediately plunges into the magical atmosphere of Wonderland. I find the score quite cinematic, and DiLorenzo's ingenious characterizations of the nonsensical creatures are brilliant. The mome wraths, the bandersnatches, the borogoves. Here is the Jub-Jub bird, portrayed first by the contrabassoon as it prances around Alice. Just as we think the adventure is complete, the piece ends with a recitation of the entire poem under a magical and soft string accompaniment. This piece is highly imaginative, descriptive, and original, and it heightens my appreciation of the classic poem. Dilana Jensen's unique career has taken her all over the world. She's captured the musical imagination of several generations since her landmark recording of the Sibelius Violin Concerto with Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra at the age of 19. She now brings her life experience to the fortunate students at the University of Notre Dame. Dilana is one of the few teachers in the world who is able to free violinists from pain caused by playing the violin, both online and in person. And she's with me now in the studio. Welcome, Dilana.
Oh, thank you, Alastair. I'm so glad to be here with you.
I can't wait to perform the Barber Violin Concerto with you. What is so special about this piece for you?
Well, first, it's very lyrical, very beautiful. And I had a special feeling about it when I was young and learning it. First, I learned it with Joseph Gingold, who was a very well-known violin teacher in Bloomington, Indiana. And I was living there. I wasn't going to the university. I was younger. But my father loved the second movement, and he especially loved that beautiful, there's a beautiful long melody all on the G string that's very heart-searing. And so as I learned the Barber concerto, I really had this feeling that there was some kind of connection with my sort of my ancestors. And there is a beautiful feeling in Barber of looking backwards. I don't know. I just feel it that way. I also think Barber is really an interesting concerto in that if you are not familiar with classical music, it's not something that is part of your everyday life or your life experience, you can relate to this. I had a very close friend that we met when our kids were little and we did all sorts of kids things. And she had no idea that I was a violinist. And one day I said to her after about a year, I said, hey, do you want to come in here and play the Barber? And she's like, well, what does that mean? You know, what is that all about? I said, well, I'm a violinist and, you know, I'm performing Barber. So she went to the concert and it was actually sort of a tour. So she went to the first concert and then she decided to buy, at that time, vinyl records or who knows, CDs of a bunch of different performances of the Barber, different artists. And she then came to my last performance on the tour. And after that, now this is somebody who never went to classical music, who really liked country music. So she had no experience with orchestras or any kind of live music in that way. And after she sort of immersed herself in this Barber violin concerto and was introduced to it in a very personal way, right, by knowing me, she came back and she analyzed these different violinists and their performances as I would. Hmm. And I thought, this is really interesting. This was the entry for her into relating to the beauty of the communication, the language of classical music. So Barber has a special place for me because of those different experiences.
That's such a great story. Yeah, I agree. There's something immediate that speaks to you straight away. I mean, you play the very first note in the piece straight away. There's no orchestral introduction or exposition. You're in straight away.
Yes, and it's very open-hearted. Mm. It also, in some ways, and I wouldn't know exactly how to pinpoint what it is that Barber does, but it feels very American. It feels very like you're looking at a prairie and the sort of long distance vista of what we imagine, the United States to be with the grand spaces and beauty. So that was another thing that I really related to in learning it and then in playing it as well.
That's a beautiful description, and we couldn't be in a better place than Indiana to experience that and to have a connection with that visual when we hear it.
Yes, and you know, that story about my friend, it's really important because a lot of people, well, I know that a lot of people are afraid of coming to classical concerts if they haven't heard a piece before, if they're not familiar, or they think, oh, Barber might be a modern violin concerto, and what does that mean, and will I be able to understand it? And as I said, this is a really beautiful entry into the language that is classical music and the art that we're sharing, the way that we see the world through this music.
Yeah, so three movements, and would that moment in the on the G string in the second movement, would that be your favorite moment in the concerto?
Well, it's absolutely searing, and it is a remarkable moment in violin literature. You know, in every piece there is some perhaps high moment, although in some pieces there are many high moments, but the first movement is very lyrical, very open-hearted, very warm, not an incredibly fast movement. The second movement is a slow movement, so it's almost like you have two slowish movements, and this is the, well, I don't want to use a cliche like tearjerker, but it is very emotionally strong.
Mm. Yep.
And I feel that when I play it.
Oh, I feel it that. When I hear it, and I can't wait to hear your take on that. So you you played it on tour when you were younger, and this lady found classical music thanks to it. You've recorded it with the London Symphony Orchestra, and how has the concerto changed for you over the years, would you say?
Well, that's an interesting question because I think that we as human beings change and don't change, don't we? I mean, this is what you find out as you grow older, that there are fundamental changes that we go through. And then there is the core of who we are and how we see the world that we probably carry from our childhood and our life experience early on. And, you know, music was brought to life for me by my mother. When she started me on the violin, I was 2 years, 10 months old, but and she didn't play the violin, but she did teach me. But she would bring alive every piece by describing what the feeling was, giving me a picture of it or a story. And so, you know, going back to how things change, I think that it's hard to say exactly how I play it differently, but I am a different human being now than when I was young. And even though it was valid, my approach as a young person and my vision of the world, now that I'm older and more mature, of course, it's going to have a different perspective. And, you know, in the old days, we revered older master players. Mm-hmm. You know, I studied with Nathan Milstein, and I heard Heifetz in person, and I also heard David Oistrakh. So these are names of the past that a lot of people don't know anymore, which is unfortunate because they are masterful artists and can give you such insight into the depth of humanity is really what it is. You know, sometimes in this current environment, youth and beauty and some superficiality is what is put up on a pedestal. But when I was growing up, it was something different that was that we admired and that I looked up to. So I guess I understand that a little better now that I'm a little bit older.
You are so young now.
But anyway, but it is great to be older, and it is great to have life experience. And I love when I perform and when I'm in music that I am bringing all of that now. I love that.
Oh, well, we cannot wait to hear your interpretation of the incredible Barber Violin Concerto with us November
the
13th.
Now, that's an interesting word you used.
Interpretation?
Interpretation.
Ah.
I wonder about that word.
Okay.
Because I think that as an artist, we take the music that we are playing, Barber, Tchaikovsky, Sibelius, whatever it is, and we must filter it through us. It is coming through us, and it is our original emotional expression that is coming through this music. So I don't feel that I'm taking Barber and trying to make an interpretation of what he wanted or what he thought. I would be respectful of that, but I could never do that sort of on artificially on top of the music. So when I perform, and regardless of what the piece is, it is really me using this music for my own expression.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm sorry to have thrown a spanner in there. No, I totally agree that it is. We can't wait to hear your original expression of this masterwork.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. So sweet.
Thank you so much, Delana Jensen. We'll look forward to seeing you and hearing you on November the 13th.
Thank you so much.
Schumann's Second Symphony can be seen as a triumph over fate. We know that Schumann's life was a dark struggle of mental and physical illness, yet in this symphony we sense light. To me, the strings at the very beginning speak of doubt, wandering, struggle, yet above their playing we hear a simple, pure brass motif of hope. I see the brass motive as a shining, guiding light which comes back as a reminder throughout the symphony. The second movement is a virtuosic tour de force for the orchestra, especially the violins. It's so technically challenging that to this day, orchestras everywhere require it as an audition excerpt, including the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. To me, this movement sounds like someone sneezing, which makes sense on one level, knowing Schumann was ill, but nowhere can I find that Schumann intended that. After all this hyperactivity, we as listeners need some rest. And the third movement provides just that. It's one of the most beautiful, emotional, and heartbreakingly romantic slow movements ever composed. Schumann himself needed rest after composing this movement, and he put the symphony temporarily aside. His health had much improved by the time he returned to finish it. He wrote in a letter, "In the finale, I first began to feel like myself again." Just listen to the opening notes, which ascend, rise, uplift, and energize us. The brass motif from the beginning returns at the end, triumphantly bookending the symphony. It's always inspiring, rejuvenating, and uplifting to experience this symphony live, and we can't wait to perform it for you on November the 13th.